Hour two of First Up here on TSN 1050. Aaron Carolla, Carlo Colaiacovo with you. A jam-packed hour ahead. CJ will join us. We'll talk about the Leafs lineup shakeup. Triple threat has been put into effect. It's Matthews on one line, it's Tavares on another, and it's Nylander on the third. How long will that last? Is it the right decision by Sheldon Keefe to try something in practice? Seems kind of stupid when I talk about it like that. But in any case, we'll get into that with CJ when he joins us at 7:45. And again, we will be ranking our most heartbreaking losses. And do I have some stories to tell about some instances of my own? Three tough ones to bring back. Just like Uma Thurman dug herself out of that grave. In any case, in Kill Bill Volume... Is that Volume 1 or Volume 2?
Two.
I think that's Volume 2.
It's
yes.
Two.
All right. Let's talk about another man who has... well, there's no easy segue to talking about Tom Brady, but some of his comments he made yesterday were really, really surprising. He was on his own podcast. I believe it's called the Let's Go podcast, alongside Jim Gray, who's been his buddy forever. And there was some speculation leading up to the weekend that was the divisional round of the NFL playoffs that saw Tampa ultimately lose to the Rams, that Brady and his future a little bit uncertain. There were some people who believed he was going to hang him up after this season. And here's what Brady had to say about his future yesterday.
Football is extremely important in my life, and it means a lot to me. And I care a lot about what we're trying to accomplish as a team, and I care a lot about my teammates. And the biggest difference now that I'm older is I have kids now, too, you know, and I care about them a lot as well. You know, they've been my biggest supporters. My wife is my biggest supporter. It pains her to see me get hit out there. And, you know, she deserves what she needs from me as a husband. My kids deserve what they need from me as a dad.
Okay, that's clip number one that I wanted to play. And maybe kind of give you a nudge as far as how we should feel about Brady and how we can pontificate on his future. Here's the other
pontificate. Wow, I've never heard that word before.
You know, a lot of people thought I was done playing football in 2015. You know, a lot of people in 2016 said you're done. A lot of people in 2018, after I left the Patriots, they said you're done.
You had a boss in 2000 who thought you'd never make it, so you would be done before you started.
Yeah, exactly. So
Coco, what do you think? Brady back next year or what?
Yes, Brady's coming back. I mean, this is something we shouldn't be surprised to hear about what he's saying. He's clearly identified these same priorities in all the other conversations he's had about potentially walking away from his game. And to think that you're sitting here today, I mean, Brady has never made a decision right after a season's over whether or not he's going to play the following season. He's always taken his time, and which he should, and which he's allowed to do. And, you know, you think that this guy here has probably been used to playing longer than, you know, than the way his situation is presented today, because he's been eliminated. So he's going to enjoy the fact that maybe this is, you know, uncharted territory for him because he's used to playing in Super Bowls. Enjoy the extra time that he gets to spend with his family without thinking about football. But let's be honest, football season is still, what, 7-8 months away? You can do a lot with your family in 7-8 months. That after 7-8 months, you're probably thinking, if your body's still telling you, which clearly Tom Brady's body would still allow him to play. But the guy broke records. Like, the guy had one of his best career years playing the game, and you think he's just going to walk away?
See, I don't think Brady's going to hang him up, but I think he should. I think now's the perfect time for him to do so. He's 44 years old. He's obviously accomplished everything that one can accomplish in the NFL, and he led the league in passing yards and passing touchdowns this year. But my main concern with Brady, and really, it's not even a concern with him, because I think if he comes back next year, he'll still be really good. I guess two things. The idea of him having that, like, Ben Roethlisberger season where he's, like, just becomes a laughingstock and the butt of every joke really scares me, because I think I'm not sure if we, like, still view Peyton Manning. Remember when Peyton Manning, like, couldn't throw the ball 10 yards in his final year in Denver? And we remember what we saw from Roethlisberger, where he was just horrendous. I don't know if that is something we will always remember about Manning. Like, I feel like I always will, just how bad he was. It was so bad. And we're always going to remember how bad Roethlisberger was in their final year. I think you want to remember Brady for being still awesome. Still one of the top 5-7 quarterbacks in the NFL. So there's that. I think secondarily, are we sure the Bucs are really equipped to win the Super Bowl? With, like, you bring Beatty back. You think about Godwin tore his ACL. He's going to miss a lot of next year. Antonio Brown's gone. Gronk's another year older. They're going to miss a ton of guys on defense in free agency as they're right up against the cap. Is this a team that can win the Super Bowl next year? Would probably be my bigger question. Much like in Green Bay, I think Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady are facing very similar dilemmas where they're looking at the future of their rosters surrounding them. Because, listen, as good as Brady and Rodgers are, you're not going to win the Super Bowl by yourself. I mean, it's just not going to happen. We saw Mahomes earlier in this year. They were 3-4 Kansas City. Their defense was horrible, getting torched every single week. And then once the defense turned around, the Chiefs went on this run, and now they very well might win the Super Bowl. I don't think the Bucs are really – like, I think you're setting yourself up if you're Brady to have like a 10-7 season. Maybe you make a wild card run, and then you probably lose, and then that's it. I don't think a Super Bowl is in the cards for Brady. Now, there has been some conversation about Brady leaving Tampa and maybe going to play for the Niners. I saw that on, I think it was Pro Football Talk floated that idea. Now, that's intriguing. That is intriguing. Obviously, you'd rather Brady than Jimmy G.
How are the Niners like the destination for all these quarterbacks to go? Because people are talking about Rodgers going there, too.
Their defense is so good. Like, it's an unbelievable
defense. And they have a great running game.
A great offensive line. You stick any quarterback there, and immediately they're the Super Bowl favorites. Uh-huh. It's just Jimmy G is kind of like, you know. And then you have Trey Lance, who may be awesome. I'll have to wait and find out. But it's a fascinating situation with the Niners, who I would guess will be committed to Trey Lance next year. I mean, you don't trade up. Clearly they adore his talent and skill set and his mental makeup and everything like that. But Brady or Rodgers?
Well, let's...
That's going to be intriguing.
Bruce Arians was commented on, you know, the season or what next year could potentially look like. Can we play that audio clip?
I think it's just a reload, you know, like it is every year. For us, free agency will be our guys. See how many and that we can get back and then build the team from there. Always look forward to that part of it and the draft. So, yeah, each year is so different and so new. Last year was to get everybody back was amazing. And doubt we can do it all again this year, but we're sure going to give it our best.
So, you know, that's the coach and that's the mindset of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Clearly, they're going to be in reload mode, not rebuild mode, as most people may think. And Tom Brady is obviously going to be the guy spearheading that because he's going to use, you know, his influence to recruit, you know, guys that would want to come play for him to take one last run. Because people know in the game, you go play with Tom Brady, you're playing for a Super Bowl.
I think this was the last run, man. Right? I think we just saw it. I think
that's it. Look, obviously, you know, Gronk shared his feeling on social media yesterday as well, too, thanking the fans. His contract's up. You know, Gronk's going to play a big role in this as well, too, because, you know, he's potentially facing the same decision that Brady is mulling right now, retirement or come back to play. And I think those two guys are, you know, made together with their decision. Whatever one does, the other one's going to follow. So I believe, look, Brady's life is football. As much as, you know, I'm not taking away from his family life, come 6-7 months when you're spending it all with your family and football season, the camps are opening up and stuff, his body is so regimented right now, it's going to be hard to walk away from. And I think his family knows that. As long as it's sort of the same mindset that I had, you know, when you start, you know, my career starts taking a different path. I, you know, NHL to Europe and stuff like that. And you're hoping that one day you can find that path back. But I was, you know, pretty understanding of the situation that if I wanted to continue playing, it was going to be over there based on money, based on lifestyle, based on opportunity. And I always said to myself, I'm going to play as long as my body allows me to play. That was the mindset I created. And luckily for me, it was a combination of two things. One, it was the first time in like 8 years where I suffered, you know, an injury that kept me from out of the lineup, both knee and shoulder. So I left the season, you know, rehabbing a knee and shoulder injury. And I'm like, do I really want to put myself through this again? And, you know, the combination of having this opportunity to walk right into helped solidify the decision for me. Mm-hmm. I wasn't making $20, $30 million a year like Tom Brady was making and has made throughout his life. But there comes a point where you just know. And I think right now, I don't think he's mentally there yet.
I guess, well, I think he's going to hang. I'm not sure. I think he should, definitely. I've already kind of articulated why I believe that. I'm not certain he will. One thing he should do, though, the Brady Gronk rival Manning cast, whatever you call
it. Yes.
Who's not watching
genius
that? Eli and Peyton are like, no, what is going on? Well, How do they get a launch mode like that?
Or they created something similar to that where they sit on those beach chairs and they tell jokes around the...
Brady's so cool, man. Like, I don't know how many... Like, if I was ranking the coolest dudes, Brady's probably in the top five. I mean, I know Michael Landsberg said that Ricky Martin was the coolest dude on earth. I'm not even kidding.
Wow.
He actually once said that and defended his take. I'm talking about living La Vida Loca. By the way, Landsberg will join us tomorrow morning. Is that right, Arad? What time will Michael be coming on?
Wow. Shout out to Michael Landsberg. And
Michael will be joining us at 9:35.
Why are you jamming him out there? Let's bring him into a lower. We're gonna get him earlier. 9:35 is not enough time for Michael. We're going to get him in a more prominent slot. It's Michael Landsberg.
Sorry, I threw in their condolences. I think it's right for us to at least share that, you know, Michael's dad passed away last week, and you know, you've known him longer than me, but I know in the short time that I've met the Landsbergs, including Ron, what an incredible person and loss for the Landsberg family.
Absolutely. And yeah, I'm sure we'll talk to Michael about that. And is Bellet's talk day tomorrow or is it Thursday? It's tomorrow? Okay, it is tomorrow. There you go. So, yeah, I guess that would be the reason why we have him on. So, looking forward to chatting with Michael. It's been far too long. And, yeah, that was some very unfortunate news. But, you know, it's how life goes sometimes. You know, Michael and his dad were really close, and they had a great run together. So, it's sad, but, you know, it's how it goes, man. Like, you know, it sucks, but it's just reality. And no easy segue to most heartbreaking losses when it comes to sports. It's kind of inconsequential in comparison, but we will rank ours stemming from Sunday night, the Chiefs and the Bills. And that's coming up next. Unbreak my heart. All right, so we're still kind of reeling. Well, at least one of us on this program is from Sunday night. The Bills, the 13 seconds, not able to close it out against the Kansas City Chiefs. And bring down the music a little bit, Chrissy. A little loud. But we are ranking our most heartbreaking losses throughout the course of our sporting lives. And Coco, I guess you've lived some of these, playing 14 years in the NHL. So I don't know if you'll be able to reflect on personal experience. But
yeah,
I'm going to start off, and I think this is one that would probably be in the top three for almost every listener if you're a Leafs fan. Go back to 2013, the 4-1 lead. Nassim Kadri puts him up 4-1. The Bruins storm back, tie the game. Goes to overtime in Game 7, and this is what transpires.
Boychuk shot right into the slot. Knocked away by Francis. Marchand centering pass. That's blocked. The rebound's Dallaire. Cleared away. They score. The Boston Bruins have prevailed 5-4 in overtime against a very valiant Toronto Maple Leaf team that cannot and does not have to hang their head after this performance here tonight.
Wow, does not have to hang their heads? Blew a 4-1 lead, dude.
Yeah, it was. I think they're still hanging their heads from that. What do you remember about that night? Because you were...
I was in Detroit.
You were still in the NHL, obviously. Yeah. You were probably watching that game, right?
So I was in Detroit in my own playoff series. We were playing against the Anaheim Ducks. And I remember that night I had a buddy in town. And we were watching the game, and we were like, oh, my God, the Leafs are going to go to the second round. Toronto's going to be going crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were – I think it was just before game 6 of our series, and we were down 3-2 against Anaheim. So we needed to win our game, game 6, to force a 7. And lo and behold, we win game 6. We go into Anaheim. We win game 7. We move on to the second round. But – watching that game with my buddy and seeing what had happened, he drove in from Toronto and he's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. He's texting with his buddies. Let me just warn people. I think this is a good lesson for people who watch sports. I understand there's emotions that go on during games and you guys want to share opinions and share thoughts. But please, I urge people, do not jump the gun when it's time to celebrate. The game has to hit 0-0-0 on the clock. And this is a good example for everybody that knows me, who was messaging me during the game on Sunday with the Bills, especially after they scored 13 seconds left. Like, let the game end before you actually jump the gun.
Absolutely. And listen, I was jumping the gun that night. I remember watching that game with my dad, and I jumped on him. I was going insane. I was so excited. I was a lot bigger Leaf fan then than I am now. Not that I'm not a supporter of the Leafs, but the whole media thing kind of clouds your love of sport. That's just how it works. But, yeah, that was a crazy. I remember coming in to the next day to work. I was producing Macko and Cause, and it was a somber one because I think there was a plan in place for us to go to New York for some games or whatever. Those were the days when we had money in sports radio. Ah, the good old days. All right, my number two, 2002. Remember Martin Gélinas, OT winner for the Carolina Hurricanes, a game that our buddy Jeff O'Neill played in. I remember Sundin scoring with 20 seconds left, and I was at my buddy Mark Rosen's house watching the game, and we were going insane, thinking, oh, we're going to game seven. This was game six. And then Marty Gélinas scores the game winner in overtime. I think Cujo was the goalie for the Leafs at that time, and I'm still reeling from that one. That was
a tough one.
That was a very tough one. I guess that was you were. Would you have been part of the Leafs organization at the time? But you would have been in the minors, right?
No, so that was what, 2002?
2002, yeah.
Yeah, I was still finishing my junior year that year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you would have been in Erie. Yeah.
Yeah, we were actually. We won the OHL championship that
damn
year.
Damn right, so, you did. Yeah. That's no heartbreak right there. All right, my final one. I mean, I still think about this from time to time. And I remember exactly where I was. I was at my house. I was watching with my babysitter at the time. This is in 2001. You know the lead up. Vince Carter is going to his graduation at the University of North Carolina on game day. Flies into Philly. I think he played all 48 minutes that night. Had himself a hell of a night. And this is how it sounded right at the end.
Curry has it. Carter trying to get free. Carter at the buzzer. No good. And the Sixers hold on and advance to the conference finals.
Ah, that's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. Imagine the bang that Mike Breen would have unleashed if VC knocked down that jumper.
Bang!
Yeah, that's probably something very similar to that. But that was as heartbreaking as I remember. I remember just weeping. Like, I was devastated. I was so invested in that Raptors team. Remember, they would have gone on to play the Milwaukee Bucks, a team with Sam Cassell, Ray Allen, Glenn Robinson, and that Raptors team was loaded. They could have absolutely hung with the Bucks. I think it was ultimately the Lakers who won. That was the Tyronn Lue being stepped over by Iverson year. So the Lakers were just an unstoppable force that year regardless. But, oh, man, never forget. Anyway,
I'm honestly surprised you stayed away from CFL because CFL.
Well, the Argos just win Grey Cups, bro.
Dude,
come on,
some of the Grey Cup moments that we just experienced, like 12th, look, obviously the recent one with Hamilton.
I'm thrilled.
The guys lost because of a stupid decision on a rouge.
Well, that's partially why they lost.
And you're not going to complain because you won a lot of money on Winnipeg.
Well, I'm not a
12th man on the field.
Dude, I'm not a fan of Saskatchewan. Like I'm a Toronto.
We're describing heartbreaking losses.
No, it's our personal heartbreaking losses.
Okay, again, I'm just bringing up examples.
Yeah, no, those are definitely hard. Oh, in Saskatchewan, 2009, you're talking about a game that our buddy Davis Sanchez played in with the Montreal Alouettes. That's as heartbreaking as it gets. Okay, Coco, lay it on us. Your top three heartbreaking losses. I can't wait to find out where Sunday night ranks.
Well, obviously, Sunday night ranks at the top of the top, but that's not going to be part of my three because it's obvious. It's an obvious one, right? I mean, the fact that the Bills losing on Sunday is definitely the most heartbreaking emotions I've ever been through. But I'm going to start with number three, and I'm going to go Scott Norwood, wide right. And I shared this yesterday. Like, even though I was a Bills fan back in the day when I was really young in 1991, you didn't really understand the moment of it. You were cheering, and then you were wondering what happened, and they lost, and, you know, the 42-yard field goal that they missed. As you start to grow up a little more, you start to process a little more. And, you know, the more you grow up, the bigger fan you become, which is why Sundays was the most hurtful. Personal experience for me, and it's not something that it affected me, but it's something that I witnessed firsthand, was in 2018, the German hockey team losing out on a gold medal.
Ooh.
In the Pyeongchang Olympics.
Because all your boys were playing on the team, right?
Seven of my teammates were playing on that team. And the crazy thing about that heartbreaking loss was Germany was an incredible story. And, you know, as much as I was cheering for Canada, you're cheering for your teammates, you're cheering for the underdog story that the Germans represented, right? Because they beat Canada in the semis, and then they're playing Russia in the finals. So, okay, let's cheer for Germany. Germany held a one-goal lead with a minute left, and they were on the power play in that game. Russia scores a shorthanded goal with a minute less than a minute left to tie it, and then obviously they score in overtime to win the gold over Germany. So, you know, how proud the Germans were to win silver, you could see the heartbreak of them being so close to accomplishing the unthinkable. Yeah. Winning a gold medal in men's hockey.
You were in Germany at the time of that game,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm sure like the entire country was zoned in on what was happening 100%. There. It must have been like a 100%. Maybe not like a Canadian, like, you know, 2010 gold medal.
Oh, it was nuts. The country was going nuts. So that would be my number two.
Okay.
My number one is personal. And it was the 2003 World Junior Championships in Halifax at home. Canada versus Russia. We had a 2-1 lead going into the third period, and we lose the game 3-2 in regulation. We gave up 2 third period goals to the Russians. And just the memory of what that moment represented for me, representing my country in front of my country, feeling the weight of the world, feeling the weight of my country on our backs to bring home gold, and ultimately, you know, suffering defeat and feeling what that disappointment felt like. It was heartbreaking for me. Absolutely heartbreaking. I mean, I have this jersey that's behind me, you know, because the jersey represented, you know, one of my, you know, best tournaments, one of my best accomplishments, leading the tournament in scoring, having the silver medal to represent it. And every time I look at it, you just think back and remember what could have been for me. You know, the chance to be a gold medalist, and didn't happen.
I'm surprised you didn't put our collective loss to James Duthie and Jeff McDonald in your list.
See, here's the thing. That's not heartbreaking. That's just very disappointing.
Demoralizing.
On our part.
Do you remember that wedge I hit into the third hole at Coppenwood, though, to like an inch? Oh, what a shot.
Yeah, you were dialed.
Can't wait to play golf. Well, you were dialed. On the front, I think I was like 37 front, like 48 back. It was horrible.
Yeah.
But anyways, we're gonna come up big. Although those two gentlemen are dialed in with the tailor-made new drivers, so
I can't see that happening.
Yeah, I was talking to our boss Jeff, and he says he's added 20 yards to his driver, and I was like, dude, I've never seen you miss a fairway before. I've never seen Jeff McDonald miss a fairaway. So
I have.
It's not good.
I played with him in a round, you know, midsummer at Copper Creek. And I was riding in a car with him. We were playing with the TaylorMade grid guys. And I'm looking at him after every shot, and I'm like, are you okay today, man? Where is this when you playing with us?
he shoots low 80s. He's like a 13 handicap, shoots low 80s every time we play against him. He just rises to the occasion. Unlike the Leafs and the Raptors did in my most heartbreaking losses. And I guess...
Is Arad giving us his?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Arad, what do you got for your most heartbreaking losses?
Well, I didn't want to have a repeat on my list, so I took out the 2013 Leafs and the 2001 Raptors. So, number three, I still got the Raptors, 2018 Eastern Conference Semifinals. Game one, Raptors are the one seed, Cavaliers are the four seed.
Yeah.
Comes down like right at the buzzer where JV and CJ Miles just fumble the ball under the basket. Get that in and maybe the whole direction of the franchise is different. Maybe Dwayne Casey and DeMar DeRozan aren't even on their way out.
Yeah, because they win that game one and they're playing with a lead instead of losing that game. And it's like, oh, it's the Cavs again. We can't beat them. And then they get swept.
Well, if I recall, exactly. They got destroyed in game two. And then game three was that LeBron full court off the backboard over OG yeah. and Anobi, right?
Yeah. No, that was game four, they came back.
Raptors were down 17 in the third quarter in that game before OG hit a game-tying three shoulder motion for the first time in his career at the time. And then LeBron crushed everybody's heart. And that was the game that ended Dwayne Casey's career as a coach, basically. Well, number two, we're going to go to the baseball diamond.
He's employed by the Detroit Pistons right now, but yes.
Well, as a Raptor. Number two, we're going to go to the baseball diamond. We're going to go to the year 2015, game six of the ALCS. The Jays down one run, second and third, one out.
Oh, my gosh.
And they can't get it in. Ben Revere strikes out. Josh Donaldson grounds out. And the Blue Jays aren't able to tie the game versus the Royals. Royals go on to sweep the Mets and win the World Series.
I think to make that worse, they had a man on third with no outs. Because...
Dalton Pompey, right?
Yes, stole second and then stole third. They had a man on third with no outs, and they had the heart of the order up and could not get him in. I remember that. That was heartbreaking, man.
Brutal.
It was very heartbreaking. They wasted a good performance by Jose Bautista. And number one, obviously we talked about it, the perfect Patriots, Super Bowl 42, march in. The defensive line of the Giants, man. O.C. Uemura, Matthias Kiwanuka will join us later in the show. And Michael Strahan made life very difficult for Tom Brady. It was the first time he looked uncomfortable, arguably, in his career. And the perfect Patriots were perfect no more.
That was
David Tyree with the bubble gum on his helmet.
By the way, Rod, you should try to track down David Tyree. I know he does some stuff with Matthias Kiwanuka as well. So you know, we're producing live on the air. But let's get Tyree on because I'm sure Cause... we'll want to talk to him, and maybe we could bring Cause on simultaneous to Tyree, and we could relive all those great moments together. Is Arad Osvandi. That's Carlo Koliakovo. I'm Aaron Carolla. Those were our top three heartbreaking moments as a sports fan after, I mean, the unquestioned number one Sunday night for our man Coco, the Chiefs and the Bills.
And by the way, AK, we had a conversation about Tarantino movies. Apparently, some of our listeners are in my corner.
Really?
Not yours. So maybe it deserves a poll question. I don't know.
Who are these? Who are these listeners?
Okay, I'll give you two of them right now. Jocelyn, I'm with you. Started watching his movies and couldn't get into them. Not a fan, so I'm on your side.
Okay, thanks, Jocelyn.
Joe LaCour, I don't like Tarantino movies either. If you haven't checked out 1883, do so.
I actually really do like 1883. That's a Yellowstone kind of spinoff. That's okay. Great. But Tarantino is successful.
And another Joseph says, Aaron Karolnik's a pigeon.
Okay.
Yes,
thank
he
you very
is.
Much. Yes. I think all of those texts and tweets were fake, that you just made them up off the top of your head. But in any case, that's my theory.
Put it up as a poll question.
Do you like Tarantino movies?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know. Just say, I don't know. How did we phrase it?
Yeah, we'll talk about it in the break.
Are you a fan of Tarantino movies?
Are you a fan of Quentin Tarantino's movies? Yes. And if anyone who says no, I just need to reevaluate your life. Personally, it's just how I view it. Tarantino, Scorsese. I watched Casino the other night as well, which is, I've seen it before, of course. What an absolute masterpiece. In any case, we'll be back with Chris Johnston in about 10 minutes. We'll talk about the Leafs line changes, and we'll have to ask him all the questions that we just discussed. His most heartbreaking moment as a sports fan. He's a Dallas Cowboys fan, right?
Ooh.
CJ? Is he?
Ooh, yes.
I don't know if he is. I don't know.
Him and LeBron.
All right, so we'll ask Cowboys him what's buddies. Going on with it, with that, and his thoughts on Tarantino, his thoughts on Matthews and Marner and Nylander being on different lines. All the good stuff coming up with Chris Johnston in about 10 minutes. First Up continues. This is TSN 1050.
So, last segment we were talking about our own personal heartbreaking moments in sports, and we all shared our top three list. And you mentioned CJ's coming up and the fact that he's a Dallas Cowboys fan. And I had somebody reach out to me yesterday basically saying, hey man, sorry about your loss, but at least it wasn't as bad as the Cowboys and what they did to me. And I tried to process what he was saying, and I'm like,
wait a minute. You think the Cowboys losing to the 49ers was more heartbreaking than the loss that the Bills just suffered?
No.
He goes, yeah, man, Dallas Cowboys, man. Like, we shouldn't have lost to San Fran. I go, dude, I'm going to
getting
stop.
Killed all game.
I said, dude, I'm going to stop you right now and just remind you that the Cowboys had no business winning that game. They were losing all game, so you can't even compare both situations. He goes, oh, the Bills never deserved to win anyways. I said, are you really?
How have you not blocked this guy's
number? I said
phone?
To him, I go, are you really trying to get into an argument and justify you being right over this? And he goes, yeah, the Cowboys' loss is way more heartbreaking because of the way it ended. I was like, do me a favor, lose my number.
Yeah, that's that instant block, if you ask me. How is
that even an argument?
Well, it is an argument. You could argue literally anything, but just because you argue something doesn't mean it has any merit. And what
true.
Your former friend is now saying is just simply wrong. And we could be biased. I mean, to him, it was more heartbreaking because he's a Cowboys fan. He's not a Bills fan. But in the ether of most heartbreaking losses, Dallas's loss isn't heartbreaking. It was just stupid
dumb.
Coaching. That's what it was. The Bills, I mean, I guess you could argue the Bills, some bad coaching too, the lack of a squib kick with 13 seconds left. But in any case, yeah, not even close to the same thing. And I'm sure it's a little even difficult this morning waking up for you, Coco, trying to process what happened with the Bills.
I don't think it's going to go away. Like, as much as I want it to go away, this is going to take a long time to heal. And you know why? Because for the next 3 weeks, you're going to be watching Kansas City probably win the AFC Championship, go to the Super Bowl, and potentially win the Super Bowl. And how much more is that going to sting? Knowing, dude, I spent probably about, I'm not going to give an exact time, but a good amount of time yesterday just trying to process what I would have done differently in that 13 seconds that was left. Especially as a defensive coordinator, when you call two timeouts to set up your defense, knowing they needed 45 yards to get themselves into field goal range for an attempt to tie in the game. I would have told my defense, guys, match up against the line with them. When the ball gets in Mahomes' hands, just grab the guy at the line and take a holding penalty. Don't let Mahomes throw the ball. Let him scramble for 3, 4, 5 seconds. Take a holding penalty because it's only 5 yards.
I think that would, that is actually, you can do that one time, I believe, the rules stipulate. Man, it was a colossal blunder at the end for the Bills.
And unbelievable.
It shouldn't even have got to that point. It was just the lack of a squib kick was the
And I watched main Dan I watched Dan Orlovsky, you know, break it down on the tape, and the defense that the Bills had set up, they had a 4-man rush with 2 safeties in the middle and 4 guys lining up deep to protect the field goal. Like, what kind of defense is this? They only need a field goal to get into range, not a touchdown.
I guess you haven't gotten over it yet.
Oh, man. Well, I people
still
messaged
fresh.
Me yesterday. Are you over it? How the hell am I going to get over it if all I'm doing is talking about it the next day?
Exactly. You know, you get dumped. You don't get over it the next day. It takes some time
right.
to get, and the Bills definitely got dumped.
You get dumped. Nice.
Chiefs and
nice
Bengals
reference.
Sunday. Yeah, exactly.
By the way, another 2 texts come in. Not a Tarantino fan. So
who are these texts from? Who are these texts from?
I don't know. They're Twitter. Go to my Twitter account. You'll see it.
Yeah, I don't want to fraternize with non-Tarantino fans.
Put it up to, well, just because you're looking at me cross-eyed by saying,
I was just shocked. I have never heard anyone say they don't like Quentin Tarantino's movies before. I've never heard that. I just, I guess this is a new frontier for me. I guess we just have differing tastes.
But you have to admit, too, that Quentin Tarantino movies are different, right?
Exactly. Creative, brilliant.
Gory. Unique. Gory, very
in
gory.
In some respects, yeah, there's some blood, yeah. I like that, though. That's always something
not
that
for
intrigues
everybody.
Me. I guess not. I guess it's not for you. It's not for some of our listeners. But what is for everybody is an appearance from Chris Johnston, our hockey insider. That's coming up next. The Toronto Maple Leafs back home after a 6-game road trip. I guess they had a little bit of a reprieve from the road as they returned home between the games. Was it on? A couple last week. I can't remember exactly. It's tough to kind of keep everything in order with the postponements and such. But they are indeed playing the Anaheim Ducks tomorrow evening. In Toronto at Scotiabank Arena, and this is a 6-game trip, a successful one overall, but really it was one where the Leafs were up and down in many respects. Is CJ on the line or not? Someone, okay, he's not there. Okay, so we'll get to CJ. We'll get to CJ in just a moment. But that's really unfortunate because I had a lot of Bitcoin-related questions for CJ. Because, ooh, it's been a tough go for crypto investors. But I guess the big storyline with the Leafs these days, at least stemming from yesterday's practice, Coco, was the decision from Sheldon Keefe to split up Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. That's right. All three on different lines. You have Matthew playing with Bunting and Kasha. You have Mikheyev, Tavares, and Marner on the second line. And the third line features Kerfoot, Kampf, and William Nylander. And I guess some people are looking at this and being like, Nylander's on that third line. You moved him off the line with Tavares, where he had so much success this year. And Sheldon Keefe explained it. And I don't know if, Chrissy, you can play the audio here. But I'm not so sure if I'm William Nylander, I'm feeling all that happy about what I'm seeing from my potential line mates. You know, Kerfoot and Kampf, they're fine, but they ain't John Tavares. Here's Sheldon Keefe's explanation of the decision.
Well, it's really just something I've been wanting to get a look at for quite some time here now, really dating all the way back to training camp. We haven't been healthy. And it's really, for me, it's about having Matthews, Marner, and Nylander on three separate lines and getting a look at what that looks like for both our team and how the opposition might look to contend with that. But yes, really since training camp, and exhibition games, I've been wanting to get a look at something like that. And we were planning coming out of the Christmas break and all our COVID issues with a look like this, but just haven't been healthy enough.
They are healthy now. They have their full complement of forwards. Everyone is back. And I think it's fine. I don't think you can be critical of this decision, at least for a practice. We'll see how they actually employ it during the game. And if they do, how long it'll stay that way, but why not see how it looks? Maybe it's a lot like Pittsburgh did with the HBK line, having Phil Kessel on the right wing on the third line, yeah. And you had Malkin and Crosby on the top two lines. Maybe there's a similar idea for the Leafs, and listen, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, the Leafs have a long way to go before they're Stanley Cup champions like that team was, but sure, give it a shot, see how it looks, yeah. Because I don't see any potential downsides other than alienating William Nylander.
Well, look, this is definitely not a situation where he should be alienated.
No.
He's not there because of his play. But, you know, again, I compliment Sheldon Keefe for, you know, being innovative. Like, this is a guy that, you know, we're in the middle of a regular season. And normally, you can find a stagnant point in your lineup with your group at this time. And he's basically sitting there saying, I'm not going to allow that to happen, especially, you know, with how many games or lack thereof that they've played over the last, what, 2-3 weeks here? Mm-hmm. It's like it almost seems like they're playing one game every 3 or 4 days. And let's just look ahead to what February is going to represent for this group, where you're going to be playing a condensed schedule and you're going to have to lean on the balance and the depth of your lineup to help you get through that stretch. Because if you're gonna go into those matchups and be one line heavy or two line heavy, considering everything they've been through now when it comes to injuries, that's the one thing you want to try to prevent going through that stretch. So, you know, again, this is a guy that is definitely focused on the now, but he's also trying to plan for what's coming ahead with, you know, the lineup that he's going to have to put out there, the minutes that he's going to have to spread out, and the production that he's going to need from his full lineup. And if this means balancing out three lines instead of two, what's the harm?
Well, what's
the
harm? I also,
because here's the thing you have to also understand. As a coach, you're not just setting up these lineups and just saying, okay, this is what the lineup's going to be, this is the way it's going to roll. Sheldon Keefe is not a dumb coach. In offensive situations, he's going to see a scenario where to say, okay, Willie, go take a shift with one of these top two lines, and then if the puck gets out, come in and change and get back to your regular line. Those are the things he's going to continue to make changes with, or at least to give himself the chance to be innovative in those games. It's not just going to be all third line and Willie's going to play third line minutes. No. To him, it's about creating balance. And I like the idea. And what's the worst that can happen?
I think you're also kind of building up potential experience with one another as you, as the season wanes on. Who knows how things will go on with COVID and injuries. So maybe it's good to get Kerfoot, Kampf, and Nylander some reps together and see how that goes. We know Bunting, Matthews, and Kasha have been very successful throughout the course of this season when Marner was out. We also know that the Tavares-Marner duo has worked exceptionally well as recently as a couple of years ago when Tavares had 47 goals with Mitch Marner riding shotgun with him. So I think it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. If I'm Nylander, I'm not thrilled. And I can guarantee he's probably like, really, guys? Like, all right. But I think it's just yet another opportunity for him to show just how far he's come and how much he has progressed as a player. He's now the top dog. You know, there's no Tavares. There's no Matthews. It's Nylander's line. Is he able to drive it like he was in the playoffs? You know, think about his performance with Kerfoot in the playoffs last year. Both of them were exceptional against the Montreal Canadiens. Is able to replicate that this year? He's going to be given the opportunity to find out for at least one night against Anaheim tomorrow.
And what I do like about Sheldon Keefe's approach here, too, is he's dangling the carrot in front of these guys. And he's rewarding them for their play. I mean, Andre Kasha, you know, in the time that he had to play with Matthews and Bunting, impressed. And he's like, you know, it's unfortunate that he got hit with COVID and you know, had to be sidelined with that. But he basically came in and said, look, I'm going to dangle the carrot in front of you again. Because you did your job. You showed us that you're capable. We're going to give you the chance to play that again. But if you don't, guess where you're going to go back to? Same thing with Mikheyev. You're dangling the carrot. And you're saying, look, we've been really happy with how you've bounced back. You've put in the work. And now we're going to reward you with it by playing with some of our best players. And I'm not saying that he's not dangling the carrot for William Nylander, because I'm not saying and using this as a punishment to him to go down to the third line, but Kerfoot and Kampf have been just as impressive in this recent stretch here. So that's how you keep guys motivated, especially in stretches like this where maybe you're not playing a lot. Yeah, okay, you're having a lot of practice days, but you don't want to create that stagnant feeling and that too comfortable feeling within this group where, you know, they sort of have that mental lapse that they really can't afford because of who they're competing with in this division, especially if what they really strive for is being the division winners. These are the games that you've got to, you know, get points out of, and that's what Sheldon Keefe is prioritizing right now, giving them the best chance to do so.
The Leafs will not have Jake Muzzin back. Well, I mean, it's possible. Sheldon Keefe said it would be a stretch to see Muzzin back. He was back at practice in a no-contact sweater. He departed halfway through the workout, but at least he was back on the ice, and that is a good sign for his prognosis going forward. Of course, he suffered a concussion against the Blues last week, so we'll have to see how he progresses. You'd hope he's able to be back sometime, perhaps later this week. Justin Hall did return to practice, his first full practice since exiting COVID protocol. He was skating alongside Rasmus Sandin on the second defense pair, and Timothy Liljegren and Travis Dermott comprised the third defense pair. Elsewhere in the NHL last night, Philly, your former team, Coco, losing 3-1 to Dallas, 12 straight losses, which is really bad. Not also considering the fact that they've already lost 10 straight this year as well.
It's bad, man.
I don't understand. Like, that roster is pretty good. Pretty talented.
Good players.
They have really good players. And listen, their goaltending has not been great, but has not been like disastrously bad either. It's just they can't get production. And I know Ryan Ellis has been banged up, missing most of the year, but it's crazy how a team with all that depth up front, and like, they look a lot like teams that, like, Philly teams in the past that have been damn good, and for whatever reason, it's just been a disaster for them. Claude Giroux is probably going to get traded. I'd be shocked if he wasn't, because the Flyers
he's getting traded,
and that's I think he's a guy who a lot of teams would be interested in. He's not the same Claude Giroux as, I guess, when you would have played with him back in what, 2013, 2014.
Yeah,
but he's still a productive player, and you add him to a top six.
You know what you're getting with Claude Giroux? And, you know, aside from the guy that's capable of putting up a ton of points, you're getting the ultimate competitor. Like, this guy here is the perfect example for young kids about the way you're supposed to practice, the way you're supposed to prepare, and the way you're supposed to play. because there is no, like, once he puts his equipment on, there is no nice guy Claude Giroux. This guy is in your face. His habits that he displays in practice, like, I remember watching him in practice and seeing the intensity that he practiced with. And it was, it really, you know, it impressed me. And I'm like, wow, okay, there's a reason why this guy's the captain of this team. And I feel bad because he really pours his heart and soul into that franchise. He wants to win so bad for that team, with that team. And for some reason, they just haven't had enough, you know, around him that feels the same way. And I'm with you. I think they've got some really, really talented players. I mean, think about the moves they made in the offseason to improve that team. Ryan Ellis, Cam Atkinson, well, Rasmus Ristolainen.
Moves to change the team. I don't know if it ultimately resulted in improvements. I mean, clearly didn't. They fundamentally alter the team. Huge trades. Chuck Fletcher made massive deals. They just haven't worked out.
And it's crazy to see how they haven't worked out. This is a team that's already fired their coach. What's next? Firing their GM?
Or just accept that we're going to suck. And I think that's pretty much what they've come to.
And I would have to imagine that they have to be, like, legit open for business sellers at this point. But who do you move out? You're not moving out Provorov. You're not moving out Farabee or, you know, some of their other young
Atkinson. Definitely not Scott Laughton, legend.
Maybe Scott Laughton would be a good candidate because that's a team that teams would be highly sought after. So,
well, you know who one guy I think teams will be after is Keith Yandel. And he tied Doug Jarvis's record for consecutive games played. Was it 964? He can break it tonight.
964 games played.
He breaks it
in a row.
You play in the NHL, you know how crazy that streak is. We'll get into another side. We'll call Chris Johnson at some point as well. And just to think that Keith Yandel is able to do that, like, it's a remarkable accomplishment. Even thinking back to last year when Joel Quenneville was going to bench him and then ultimately played, then he scored and he stayed in the lineup the rest of the year. But my guess is he probably breaks the record and then they hand it off to some younger players because Philly is a team in utter disarray. And I don't know how that's going to go the rest of the year, but my guess is there'll be a lot of guys shipped out. We'll ask Chris Johnson about that. We'll also be joined by Mathias Kiwanuka, two-time Super Bowl champion, in the third hour of First Up. We continue here on TSN 1050.